Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello and welcome to the Miles to Memories podcast. I'm Sean Coomer, your host, joined by Joe Chung from As the Joe Flies and Disney Deciphered. Joe, my voice is a little tired. Just got back from Europe and I am exhausted.
Yeah, did you get back today or like last night? Coming back, you must have gotten back like during the day, right? It's a daytime flight back.
Yeah, it's kind of rough because Paris is 8 hours ahead of Las Vegas. It was 9 and then daylight savings time, so it was 8 hours. And our flight left at 11:35 a.m. and we landed in L.A. and then we had a few hours layover. So I didn't get home until about 9 p.m. Vegas time last night, which, you know, is basically staying up all night in European time. So that wasn't good, but then naturally we went right to sleep, got 8 hours of sleep. So hopefully that resets me for the jet lag. You know, we've talked about jet lag so much. I don't know how much time I'll have on this show to talk about it, but I did use Time Shifter. So maybe on the next time we talk, I can go into more detail about that. Didn't work so well for me on the way out, but I don't think it's the app's fault. I think that's more my body. I suffered pretty bad flying out there, but I feel good now. So maybe coming back, it won't be so bad.
Are you using it for your return? Because then we can wait till next week and, you know, see how it went both ways.
Well, I'm already back, so I did use it. But yeah, I am continuing to use it.
You got
to
shift back, though. You know, you got to shift back.
No, I know, I am. I'm hoping that just the 8 hours of sleep, you know, the natural thing did it. But yeah, I am using it, and there are some options. So I do want to talk about it on a future show, but we're going to talk about the trip more, and then I will talk about Time Shifter, because I did use it throughout this trip. All the notifications, following them, the different options. So look forward to that. A full review of Time Shifter coming up on the Jet Lag podcast.
Sounds good. Sounds good. That's going to be our spinoff podcast from Miles to Memories. All right. So let's get straight into the trip. It's me with time issues today. So I apologize to everyone if you wanted a longer Sean trip report. And you're welcome to everyone who wanted a shorter Sean trip report. Now, you guys started from LA, right? So you did a one-way car rental and you went by Magic Mountain. I mean, Six Flags Magic Mountain. By the way, you got a shout out on this week's episode of Disney Deciphered because we're talking about regional theme parks. And, you know, we're excited to have you on in the future to talk about your Disneyland Paris. But enough plugging other podcasts there. But one-way car rental, starting at Six Flags Magic Mountain, it seems like a pretty tiring way to start a trip to Europe.
Yeah, this is one of those things where I think the 25-year-old version of me planned it. Originally, we were supposed to drive down Friday night and then Saturday go to Magic Mountain and fly to Europe on Saturday night. And we were getting so late. I had so much work to do to get shows pre-prepared and everything that Friday wasn't going to happen. And I was getting all stressed out. So we actually woke up early Saturday, drove down, went to Magic Mountain, and then flew to Europe that night. And it was a very exhausting way to start the trip and probably not the best way to do it. Although I do want to point out one-way car rentals, a great way to reposition if you can find a code or you have the ability to get it for not too much money. And that's been something we've used over and over. So Magic Mountain, going to an amusement park, probably not the best way to do it, but one-way car rentals, something people should consider as an option for, you know, relocating for an award ticket.
Wait, so how much time were you actually in Magic Mountain? And do they even have full hours right now? I mean, maybe because of spring break, but I know like often at this time of the year, it's not like a full 10-hour day or whatever.
Magic Mountain's open all year round. I think it's on the weekends in the off season, but it was every day. So it was open, you know, full hours, 10:30, I think, till 8 or 9 at night. We spent about 6 hours there, I'd suppose. So it wasn't too bad. And we've been there a lot. I grew up with that park. So it's not like anything was new or we felt like we had to do everything. So that was good. It was kind of picking what we could do. And there were some rides Ellie hadn't been on that she was now tall enough to ride. So it was a good day overall at Magic Mountain. Just an exhausting way to start the trip.
Yeah. Well, you flew from what? Los Angeles to London and then on to Lisbon. That Los Angeles to London leg is what, 9-10 hours? And I know you flew in AA business class, so I'm assuming that was lie flat. Did you guys manage to rest after being crazy on Magic Mountain? And how is AA business class serviceable?
Yeah, AA business class is fine. One thing that was cool about this entire trip was all the flights were on time. So that worked out. Going there, our connection, our flight from Lisbon to Paris was on time. Our flight home was on time. And that really worked out nicely for us. The redemption was AA business class, saver award, 57,500 advantage miles, plus $23.10 in taxes, AA medal to London, and then British Airways from London to Lisbon. And that all worked out great. AA has their reverse herring bone business class, lie flat seats. It's great. And, you know, back in the day when I first started flying business class a lot, and people are going to say, oh, he's bragging or whatever. But if you've been in this hobby a long time, a lot of people have flown. I've flown business class a number of times, different airlines. It's great. And I really enjoy it. But now I sort of focus on trying to sleep. I don't care as much about the experience. And in this case, I actually slept 6 hours on that flight. And that was the most I had slept on a plane ever, I think. So that was good. But then it messed up my schedule going forward. So I don't know how good it was. But that flight, I didn't spend much time awake, did the first meal service, slept, woke up for the second meal service, and then we landed. That all went pretty good. So good marks for AA, nothing special. But when you can get a saver ticket, especially for three passengers at 57,500 miles for business class these days, I think that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, I mean, that's theoretically what business class is for, right? Business class isn't for rubes like us trying to, we don't have time, but you see that TikTok about the parents who borrowed like $1 billion from the parents. Anyway, I digress. Look it up. All that aside, the whole point of business class, right, is theoretically you're going over there to do business and you're there to rest. And you've stayed in thousands of hotels. That's a really old joke for some of you, which we haven't made for a while. You've flown a lot of business class flights. I mean, that's the whole point, though. The point is to rest. Now, Lisbon has been on the list of cities that like I've wanted to visit for a really long time. In fact, an old friend of mine was in Portugal just over the February break, and her pictures looked amazing. She went to Lisbon and also Porto and maybe one or two other cities. Was this your first time in Lisbon? And I know you had talked a little bit about your hotel and stuff, but I'd rather hear about, is Lisbon as cool as it seems in pictures?
Yeah, so this was our first time on mainland Portugal. We had that one day in Punta Delgada in the Azores, which is off the mainland, on our transatlantic a few years ago. And it gave us a little taste of Portugal. Just like you, this had been really high on my list, but it had always sort of gotten missed in different trips. So I was happy to finally get to do it. And Lisbon delivered. Let's just put it that way. Portugal delivers. Now, I haven't been to the rest of mainland Portugal, so I'm really going to talk about the Lisbon and the areas around it. But the people are friendly. It's cheaper than the rest of the areas in Western Europe, which is really nice. And beautiful, lots of, you know, history, like you would expect to find, all kinds of cool culture, and very friendly people. So I really enjoyed our time there. And, you know, it was only 2.5 days, which is not a lot. So we were trying to get a lot done. Usually our style is to travel slower, do things more independently. But in this case, we had to rely on some tours and pay a little bit to see more, I suppose.
So did you do like one of those bus hop on, hop off tours? Or are there any, are you a Rick Steves guy? I don't think we ever talked about this. I've been.
I'm not that old, Joe. I had my 42nd birthday on this trip, but I am not that old. Just kidding. Everybody out there.
You're not that old. I've been a Rick Steves guy since I was like, since our honeymoon. I think that was when I was first. So I was like 27 then. That's when I was first introduced to Rick Steves. So not a Rick Steves guy. So then what kind of tours did you find?
Well, you know, admittedly, the one tour excursion that we did was probably more of a Rick Steves type tour. I mean, it's just funny because I make fun of PDX Deals guy all the time because he likes Rick Steves and I just call him old for that. I do like Rick Steves. He knows his stuff. Just not the way I've generally traveled.
Dang, why you gotta stab me in the back like that? You know, equating me with PDX Deals guy.
It's true. It's an ongoing joke. Well, I did want to say this. So the first day we got there, and I recommend anybody do this in Europe, anytime you get there, is do a free walking tour. Now, these are tip supported, generally, meaning that the guide is going to be really good trying to get tips from you at the end. And, you know, people tip anywhere from like 5, 10, 15 euros a person. I think 10 euros these days is probably the right amount to tip per person. And it's cheaper than you're going to pay for any sort of tour anyway. But we did one through freetour.com. Generally, any city you go to in Europe and everywhere else around the world, just Google free walking tour for that city. Look at the reviews and you'll see that they're pretty good. So this one was from freetour.com. It was called Essential History and Fun Facts and Free Tastings. Usually they're about 2 hours. This one was 3 hours and there was about 20 people, no other Americans. And this is a great way to kind of see people from all over the world. There were people from all over Europe and some Canadians. And it's really nice to kind of get to know people and do it. But it's also walking. So you're being active. You're seeing things on the ground. And I prefer to do that in cities. And it's also a great way when you first get to a city to get a lay of the land, to see what you want to see, learn a little history, and then you can dive in deeper in future days. So that worked out really good. It was all around kind of the center of the city through the historical areas, down by the water, and then it ended where we could see a sunset over Lisbon, which is one of the most picturesque cities. It's beautiful. The architecture is a little different than I've seen elsewhere, and it really amazes me how different Portugal is compared to Spain, because I think a lot of people think they're very similar. The cultures couldn't be more different. The way I think about it is, you know, Spain is that like type A, loud, you know, rambunctious, fun, over the top kind of person. And Portugal is that sort of introverted, quieter person that's a lot of fun, but you got to kind of peel back the layers to get to know it. They're both great. So not putting either down. They're just so very different. And I love Portugal, probably more my speed than Spain, but I've been to Spain a bunch of times, love that country too. But it really is amazing how different they are compared to one another.
What does being fun and rambunctious have to do with being type A? Hey, Sean. Okay, you could be a type A introvert or a type A, extrovert. I reject your premise, but other than that, I'll take your word for it.
Okay, we'll put it another way in terms of another old reference on this podcast. Spain is more like Mark, Portugal more like Sean. How about that? You know, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. No, I'm picking up what you're putting down. So I remember you had talked, you were staying at the Hyatt Regency Lisbon, and I think that's the one where there were room restrictions in terms of the number of people and stuff like that. How did you end up staying, and what did you think about that resort?
Yeah, the room restrictions there, I don't think were as bad, although I don't remember. Maybe the standard rooms only hold two. I was able to get a tier suite upgrade, so I was in a standard suite there. It's a category four, so I paid 42,000 points for 3 nights, so I think one night was off peak. And this is a new hotel. It's located near the convention center along the water, about a 10-minute drive, I'd say, from the center of the old part of Lisbon. The other thing is that Ubers there are super cheap. So from like the hotel to the center of Lisbon was like €5. There is a streetcar that runs there. There is public transport, but I found that Uber was easier just because it was so cheap. It would have cost us as much to take the train or the streetcar. And I liked it. I liked the location. If people know Lisbon, and I didn't really know this about it, but they have a sister bridge to the Golden Gate Bridge, and that's located right outside the hotel. So you get these beautiful Golden Gate Bridge-ish vibes. And then across the water from there is their Christ the Redeemer statue, which is a sister to the one in Rio de Janeiro. So you have that as well. So I really like this area a lot, even if it wasn't in the very center. And then other than that, it's a brand new Hyatt Regency, what you would expect. If you've been to that brand in Europe, the breakfast is going to be similar. It's not going to blow you away like maybe some hotels in Asia, but it's very solid, good service. The suite was very nice as well. So I really like this hotel. Definitely would stay there again. There's not a complaint I have about the place. And it's nice to stay in newer hotels in Europe sometimes compared to some of the older places that are a little bit smaller, a little bit darker. But the center of the city, if you want to stay in the center, it seems like it's mostly Airbnbs and stuff like that. And the sad thing is a lot of the locals were telling us no people from Lisbon, no Portuguese people live in the center of Lisbon anymore because of the tourist boom. All those places have been converted into like Airbnbs. So when you're walking around these neighborhoods, there's like only tourists and there's no locals, which kind of stinks.
Yeah, I feel like just the way tourism has gone, it just feels, I mean, like even New York City, you know that there's a lot of people there who are not tourists, but it's tough to, I mean, I guess when you're walking through Times Square, you figure like 85% of them are tourists, except for Elmo and Mickey or whatever. But it's awesome that things have become more global and we can visit everywhere in the world. But then because of that, you know, you lose that local flavor. So did you spend like all of your time in Lisbon? Did you get to see anywhere else in Portugal or any cool things that you might recommend to people?
So there's a couple of day trips that people do from Lisbon. One is to Sintra, which is this beautiful town up in the mountains, about 40 minutes away. You can take the train there for super cheap. There's three castles there. There's an old Moorish castle. There's the kind of famous colorful castle called the Peña Castle. And there's another castle there. There's another town called Cascais. And if I'm mispronouncing this Portuguese, it's a very strange language for me, so I apologize. That you can also do a day trip. So if we had more time, we probably would have done stuff on our own. But given that we only had one day, I decided to book a tour. And this tour took us to Sintra, to the famous castles, to Cascais, down the coast, and to the westernmost point in continental Europe, which was kind of cool. So you got to see all of the kind of surrounding areas around Lisbon in one day, where maybe if you had 2 days, you could do it on your own via the train and explore a little bit more. That said, I really didn't mind the tour. Great tour guide. It costs us $80 a person, which again, this is not our typical way of traveling, but you know, we got to see a whole lot more. So sometimes you got to do that. And of course, we were on the tour with a bunch of older Americans. So there's your Rick Steves crowd there, Joe.
I think if you were listening to some of my trip reports from the last couple of years, like Taiwan, New Zealand, I hate to say it, Sean, but are we entering that age bracket where at least for some of the stuff, it's just easier to go on a tour and not do it ourselves, not worry about renting a car, not worry about dealing with the maps, which is crazy because, you know, all the maps are online and stuff like that. But I just have found, especially, you know, I talked about going to Hobbiton and stuff like that. I didn't want to wake up at 4:30 a.m. and drive at 5. You know, I'd rather someone drive me. And maybe that's just the stage of life we're getting to, Sean. Because, yeah, 25-year-old you and me, I think we would have done it ourselves.
Yeah, for sure. But I'm glad we did the tour just because we got to see more. Although if I did have more time, especially the day trip to Sintra, that would be super easy. The train leaves right from the center of Lisbon. It's about, I think, 40 minutes, they said, to get out there. And there are like local buses that run between all the castles because it's very hilly and the castles are up on hills. But you can take the bus between all the castles and super easy to do it yourself for Sintra. But again, to be able to see all of this of the day, drive the coast, see the westernmost point in Europe, it would be very difficult unless you rented a car to do it yourself. So I'm glad we did it. The tour guide was great. And I really enjoyed that. So basically, we packed a lot in. I feel like we saw a lot and there's more to see in Portugal, but I did not regret going there and getting a little bit of a taste of it. And as I expected, I loved it. I loved the culture. I loved everything about it. And I want to go back, spend some more time there. Highly recommend going there. And as I said, it's cheaper than most of the other countries in Western Europe. So there's a benefit to that as well.
All right. Are anything else on Portugal or should we move on to France?
I don't think there's anything else with Portugal. Just go there, find a way to get there. Pretty cool stuff. Lots of fish everywhere. A couple little food things. One of the famous things there is a kind of potato fried cake with fish. Codfish is everywhere. That's their big fish there. And that's kind of cool. And then they love their sardines there, Joe. There's so many different versions of canned sardines. I've never seen it. Are you a sardines guy? Have you ever eaten sardines out of a can? I eat them on Caesar salads. That's about it. Never eaten them out of a can. And I won't start now.
I'm not a sardines guy, period. But you know who is? All my kids, and especially my son, he is like a crazy sardines guy. And speaking of New York City, Times Square, there was this like random sardine place, which was obviously geared towards tourists, but it was like advertising Portuguese sardines. And there was all these, you know, the cans were the kind of the draw. They were like super cool, very detailed, lots of bright colors and stuff like that. And so you're making me think even more that we're going to need to visit Portugal because my son, I think in terms of like mercury and stuff like that, you know, he's still only 9. You're supposed to chill on the sardines. So we've had to like, you know, limit him at times, but he'll like eat an entire can in like a sitting. He's one of those kids who like, you know, you put the food down and you walk away. And if it's something he likes, you come back like 2 minutes later and it's all gone. Yeah, we'll have to check that out. One other thing on Portugal, I just feel like TAP often, you know, that's one of Portugal's airlines. They often have either business class seats available for saver space or like random sales. I would say it's one of the airlines that people use a lot as a gateway to get to Europe. Just like, you know, you did a stopover here, right? But a lot of people will just use that and not stop over and then just land in Lisbon, lay over, move on to the rest of the continent. If you want to check out Portugal, and of course, Boston has a direct flight on TAP as well. So I feel like there's a lot of great miles and points options to get to Portugal specifically. And I feel like sometimes it's overlooked, you know, maybe like Iceland too with Iceland Air. That's not on points, but, you know, people just fly by and skip the place itself.
Yeah, it's sort of nuts how crazy the tourism has been in the rest of Western Europe for 30, 40 years, really this huge boom. And it's really only happened in Portugal the last 10 years. So they're a little bit further behind, which is actually good because as anybody who's traveled a lot, when tourism reaches full maturity, it's not always great from the visitor's perspective. And being able to go places before that happens is super nice. So yeah, do that. And especially East Coast, like you said, TAP, lots of good things there. Star Alliance carrier. And I haven't flown them. I had a couple itineraries booked over the years with them that I didn't end up flying, but I've heard great things. So we flew to Paris from Lisbon, booked a cheap Air France ticket. I think it was like $70 one way. So no mile or point redemption there. I'll use points to kind of offset that. And in fact, the same thing with our tours and everything. Instead of using Ultimate Rewards, I did look at like booking that tour through Ultimate Rewards. It was more expensive. So I just paid cash and then I'll just use our points, you know, cash in some points to offset that. So that's all good. And France, what can I say about France? We had 4 days in Paris, Joe. Originally, we were only going to do 3 days, but then I switched our flight back to give us one extra day, meaning that Ellie was going to miss a day of school. So that gave us 2 days at Disneyland Paris and then 2 days in the city proper. And as people who listen to the podcast know, this whole trip was inspired by the Electrical Sky Parade, which is a drone show at Disneyland Paris that is based on the Main Street Electrical Parade, and which was my favorite parade as a kid. It's a parade I've seen at all the parks, different versions of it. They have one in Tokyo, and the music is very classic, and I love it, and I could not wait to see this, and I was so excited to get there. And I hadn't been to Disneyland Paris in a few years. Nice to get back to that park as well. And I suspect there's a lot of people listening who have kids that have really debated whether they should do Disneyland Paris. And as you said, we're going to talk about it on a Disney Deciphered show where we'll talk all about Disneyland Paris. So I don't want to go into it too much other than to say that the Electrical Sky Parade was fantastic, and it lived up to the hype. I can't wait for it to come to the States, which there's some rumors that maybe it will. So hopefully it does make its way here. I think people will be delighted.
I am delighted if that comes over. I just think drones are so cool. I feel like people have a negative idea about drone shows. I don't know why, though. I just think they really can enhance things. And I love fireworks, too. I just feel like you can use them in concert together, and that's awesome. So really excited to have you on Disney Deciphered soon to talk about that. I'm just curious, did you like just do Disneyland Paris for 1 day? Did you do it for 2 days? Like, I feel like when people go to Paris, when Disney nerds like us go to Paris, it's like, how much time do I spend in one of the most famous cities in the world? And how much time do I spend in Disneyland? Which, well, whatever. You know, we know you're judging us already.
So this was my fifth time at Disneyland Paris. And I only say that to say the first two times I went, we did 2 days. And then the third and fourth time I went, we only did 1 day. And then this was 2 days again. So I've kind of been able to compare and contrast. I would say for most people, if you're not huge Disney fans, 1 day is fine. The nice thing about Disneyland Paris, if you're staying in the center of Paris, it's about a 40-minute train ride on the RER out there directly. There's a station right there. So for a day trip, you're staying in the city, you just want to do 1 day at Disneyland Paris, perfectly doable. Wake up, take the train out there, spend the whole day, take the train back. It's a long day, but it's certainly doable. You don't have to stay out there or move hotels. But we started there, so we decided to stay by there. Now, I've stayed at different places. There's a lot of what they call apart hotels there, which are like kind of extended stay hotels, I would say. They're more for families. They have kitchens so you can cook, things like that. That's a big thing in that region. Of course, Disney has their on-property hotels, but I would warn people against them. None of the Disney hotels, except for the Disneyland hotel there, have air conditioning. So they're older, they're not as good. And the closest hotel other than the Disneyland hotel, which sits right at the entrance of the park, is still a 15-20 minute walk away from the parks. So they're not super close. You do get a little bit of early access, but I just don't think the Disney hotels are really worth it unless you're splurging for the 1,000+ euro a night Disneyland hotel. But I did want to talk about the hotel we stayed at, which is a brand new one. It's a Moxie hotel. That's why I want to bring it up. So that's Marriott, and it's called the Moxie Val de Europe. Now, Val de Europe is a huge mall that's one train stop away from Disneyland. And this hotel is a 2 minute walk from the train station. So you walk out of the hotel, 2 minutes to the train station, a 3 minute ride, and you're right at the gates of Disneyland. Closer basically than the Disney on property hotels time-wise, depending on, you know, the trains and how you time it. And I really like the hotel. It's Moxie. This was my first time ever staying at a Moxie hotel, which is like super hip and cool and modern. One thing I didn't love is a platinum member. I got a 10 euro per person per day credit instead of breakfast. And that's for the first two people. And breakfast was like 18 euros. So we got a 20 euro per day credit. We're not big on breakfast these days, especially when we're going. So it's not a huge deal for us. We just went to the store, got some croissants and, you know, went on about our way. And then we used the food and beverage credit later when we got back to the hotel. They had really good like pizzas at the bar. So it was nice there. One other reason to stay in that area, you have the mall there, all kinds of restaurants and shopping. So you're more kind of in a city area compared to being isolated out at Disney, even though, you know, you're only a few minutes away. So highly recommend that hotel. If you know what the Moxie brand is, then you'll know what to expect there.
We had talked about the Aloft and how like the brand was a little weird and some of the furniture was in weird places. I've heard similar things about Moxie. Any like funny things to note, like a gigantic immovable luggage rack thing right when you open up the bathroom door like I had in Taiwan?
Nothing too crazy. You know, it follows the trends of a lot of these new ones where there's no closet, right? The closet is exposed in the room. There's no desk, those sorts of things. But I knew what to expect. The rooms are small. The air conditioner doesn't work very well. This is the thing about European hotels. Even if they say they have air conditioning, they really don't. They're using central air and they control the air. So in a time like this, where you're sort of in a border season where some days got warm and others were cold, you know, sometimes you're going to be warm, but you can just open the window and it was cold enough outside. So never had any problems there. But I do miss air conditioning in the way we have it in the US when we travel to some of these places. And even if you're going to a new hotel, a new build, don't expect that you're going to get like be able to get the room down to 60 degrees with the air conditioner or something like that. But I imagine in the summer it's fine. I'm sure they'll turn it all on and you'll be fine. Yeah, no complaints about the hotel. I mean, it was good. It was funky. It seemed like a lot of the locals were hanging out there at night. It was packed. Like they have a pool table there, game rooms, they had a kids room, a lot going on there. A great family hotel, but also like young adults seemed to really like it. So after about 9, 10 p.m. until like 2 in the morning, there were a bunch of sort of 20-somethings there. So that looked like they were locals as opposed to like Disney people. But a lot of people staying for Disney as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. I had a client stay there for Disneyland Paris a few months ago, just like you did. So that's pretty cool. All right. So Paris proper, where did you stay? I think you were struggling to decide where to stay because there was like a lot of options, but none of them good. So what did you end up with?
So if people remember, I had the Park Hyatt booked and they wouldn't guarantee me a room for 3 people without me paying an upgrade fee ahead of time. And I knew that we were going to be out of the room a lot and we're not really caring so much about the luxury features and all of that. And we've stayed at the Hyatt Regency in Paris a couple of times before. And when Ellie found out we were going to Paris, what she said was, I want to stay in the room with the view of the Eiffel Tower. She remembers the hotel because the Hyatt Regency is the tallest building in the city of Paris, the city of Paris proper. There are tall buildings kind of on the outskirts, and it has amazing views of the Eiffel Tower if you get a room like that. Now, as a globalist, I've always had views of the Eiffel Tower. The rooms are pretty small there, but they're doable, and it was renovated, 5-6 years ago? So the rooms are decent. It has a club lounge, which has pretty good breakfast, hot items like eggs, bacon, all the things you would expect, good cheese, good bread. At nighttime, most of the lounge is converted into this bar because of the views of the Eiffel Tower, and then the nighttime service is in a much smaller area and they don't have hot items at night. They don't have hard liquor, but they have good wines and stuff like that. So you're getting pretty good value there, I think. It's a category 4. Although when I stayed there in 2022 and again this year, they're playing games with the regular rooms and I was not able to get a regular room on points. And I kept waiting for one to open up and it didn't. So I had to bite the bullet and book a club room, which is a total ripoff because I get club access anyway. And I just did it. And Ellie was so happy to get this room. So sometimes it's not always about, you know, Vendoming and getting the fanciest experience. It's about, you know, making the kid happy. And boy, was she happy when she walked in that room and saw the Eiffel Tower again.
Yeah, all I got to do is buy sardines. All you got to do is have a view of the Eiffel Tower. You know, our kids are just so simple, so easy to please. But I totally get that. You know, kids have their memories. And I mean, that's the beauty of traveling and getting the chance to travel on miles and points and doing this when the kids are young, right? Because they build memories. And then when you go back, you can build on those memories. So that's awesome. I'm glad that she had a great time there. What did you do during your time in Paris? For us, Paris is one of those cities that we've been to twice. So we now like have things that we want to repeat and do again. Do you have that kind of stuff for you or was it new stuff? What did you find yourself spending your time doing when you're in Paris?
Well, speaking of that, Joe, really interesting. Our first trip to Paris was in 2009. My son was 9 years and a couple weeks old. This trip, Ellie was just about a week shy of her 9th birthday. So they were within a month of the same age as each other. And like you, I like to go back and do things again. One of the reasons I actually like the Hyatt Regency, you're more in a real area of Paris compared to down in the fancier areas where all the tourists are. And I like that at this point. I don't need to be surrounded by millions of tourists. I can walk the neighborhoods, things like that. And because of that, I want to recommend a few things. The first thing we did, it was my birthday on Saturday, and we also celebrated our anniversary, our 23rd wedding anniversary, Jasmine and I, in Lisbon. So this was a great kind of week to do all of this because we have all of that stuff happening in the week. But on my birthday, we went to the Jardin d'Acclamation, or however you pronounce it. My French is terrible. But this is a garden that dates back to 1860. And the first time we went there was in 2009 with my son. And because they have a few roller coasters there, that's how I learned about it. But don't be distracted. This is an amusement park with some kids' rides. It's not, you know, a huge amusement park, but it's gardens. There's animal exhibits. And this is basically the way Parisians have been having their leisure time on the weekends and during the week for 100 and some odd years. And I love being able to experience a city in the way people did in previous generations, especially now as life has changed so much with technology. And I loved it. They have a small train that runs through there. That's 170 years old or something like that. And it's only about a 10-minute walk from the Hyatt Regency as well. But again, just the joy of bringing our son there when he was nine and then our daughter there again 15 years later when she was nine, that was really cool. And I loved it. It was a great way to spend my birthday. It was packed on Saturday. All local people, you will not find tourists there. Maybe the occasional one or two. There's also the Louis Vuitton Museum Foundation thing right there too. So there are some other practical things to see in that area. But highly recommend that. Great for people with kids. They'll be exposed to local French kids. There's a few rides there. You can just go into the gardens, or you can buy tickets for the rides individually, or you can buy a wristband. We just actually walked around and just bought a ticket for the train. We didn't do any of the bigger rides because we've done them before. And what a great way to spend it. So I definitely enjoyed that. Highly recommend it. And just walking around those areas. Again, you're in more local areas of Paris. And I like that a lot better than the crush of people down in the tourist areas. And I did said the same thing last year in London. Been to London enough times, I don't really care about being down by the Parliament Building and Big Ben. It's crazy down there. It's not fun. But when I finally got out and started seeing the local parts of London, and I am not going to say I've seen every part of London, but man, did I really start enjoying the city in a different way. And I think Paris is the same way. It's like growing on me every visit because I'm getting further and further away from the typical tourist stuff. Although we did do some of the typical tourist stuff too.
Well, you got to recreate that trip with Sean Reese. What do you like to eat in Paris? You know, I've heard it said that Paris has the worst food in France because it has, you know, it has all the foods, but none of them are like as excellent as if you went to the actual regions. For me, it's croissants. By the way, just before, like as I was driving home to record with you, Sean, I heard people talking about how on TikTok people are arguing about whether you should say croissant or croissant. So, you know, people are silly on that social media on TikTok, as long as it still exists. And then croissant for me and simple ham and butter and cheese sandwich, you know, that's like my go-to. It's just when I'm in France, like I just want to eat as much bread as possible. The rest is all fine and good, but you know, that's what I want.
So yeah, you will find us at grocery stores often. And we didn't do it so much on this trip because we had good bread and cheese sometimes at the hotel, so we didn't have to do it. But even when we were backpacking, let's say in 2009, go into a grocery store, get a couple good cheeses, a baguette, good to go there. Like you said, you can buy the pre-made sandwiches that have butter on them. I don't love the butter on the sandwich as much as like mayonnaise, but that is very typical ham, cheese, and butter, like you said, and it's good stuff. And then going to the bakeries, that's really where it's at, man. Get some good sweets, the croissants, and again, apologize for my French pronunciations of everything. Macarons, just anything like that is just great. I always love the good Haribo candy all over Europe. That's not just specific to France, but I always find variations that you can't get here. And I really don't actually eat Haribo candy at home, but I do eat it when I'm traveling because I love it so much. So things like that is what we do. And I think that's very typical when you're traveling with kids. I don't want to go to the bistros or try to find the fancier places to eat. I'm sure they exist. And maybe on future trips, Jasmine and I will do the Vendome and we'll eat at fancy restaurants, and maybe that's another phase of our lives. But it never ceases to amaze me how good some of that cheese you can get at the grocery store, throw it on a baguette, walk along the Seine River, and that is magic, man. Total magic.
I totally agree. If you want to know, just because it's on my mind, Sean, but the argument about the croissant thing is one person's like, you should pronounce it the French way. And then the other people are like, well, if you're speaking like plain old American English and you're just talking about it, it doesn't make sense to throw in that pronunciation along the way. So chime in.
You can do that about any word, though, Joe. Any word in any language. So
yeah, I know. That's why it's so funny. Hit us up on Slack or on social media with what your thoughts on this stirring debate is. And the last thing I have to say before we get to your flight home, Sean, is Barcelona.
Yeah, exactly. That is the one that you know. And I've done back and forth. I think it doesn't matter. It's fun to say Barcelona, but you don't have it.
To be fair, I don't care.
But you did it better with the deep voice, too. You got to do it with a deep Spanish accent. Yeah, you can't miss that.
I'm just being dumb. I don't fall on any side of this debate, but it's fun to argue sometimes. Flying back, if I recall correctly, you managed at the last minute to ensure, I can't remember which leg was locked in last, but you managed to get lie flat both ways. So what was your return lie flat?
Before we go there, I just want to say we did do the couple tourist things. We climbed the Eiffel Tower stairs, which is something we hadn't done since 2009 with my son. We'd been there a lot. Every trip we go to the Eiffel Tower, we're obsessed with that. Last trip in 2022, we sat on the promenade outside there and had a picnic with a bunch of French people, just like they did again 150 years ago. And that was neat. This time it's all closed. There's a lot of Olympic construction going on. They're getting the final stuff ready for the Olympics there. Most of the construction I saw 2 years ago is done, so it's actually in better shape that it's been for a while, because, you know, we're only a few months away at this point. So that's good, but the summer is going to be crazy. But we climbed the Eiffel Tower, and Jasmine and I's thoughts on that were like, maybe we're not going to do this again, the stairs, I mean. So let's do it now. Get that experience. I love it because you're getting the different views of the city and you're in the internal part of the tower. You don't get that as much with the elevator when you're going up. So I recommend doing that if you can. It's cheaper too. And that was a lot of fun. And then of course we did the Louvre. We've been putting this off till my daughter was old enough to remember it and kind of selling it to her for all these years. She finally got to see the Mona Lisa and she was super excited about that. And I had forgotten what the scrum was like to see it. That room is insane to get in there and see it. Everybody pushing each other out of the way, trying to take pictures over each other. It's nuts, but the Mona Lisa is cool. I don't know, you know, it's smaller than most people think it is, but it's a neat experience and one people should do. And the Louvre is an incredible museum. It definitely lives up to the hype. Way too much stuff to see in one day or one visit. So you can just keep going back there and see things you never saw before.
Agreed. And it's so big that it's not as crowded. Like, you know, Musée d'Orsay feels crowded, like no matter where you go, but in the Louvre, you can find like these little corners and, you know, all the artists. Amazing. So really, yeah, totally agree. I don't know if I need to see the Mona Lisa again, but if I'm on the Louvre, I will probably, I'll probably swing by.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it since 2009 and taking the other kid to see it. I don't know when I'll go back, but it's a great painting and they do things good. It wasn't that busy in Paris because tourist season hasn't hit yet. So I can't imagine. It was still busy everywhere, even though it wasn't busy. So I can't imagine what the summer will be like with the Olympics. So, you know, make sure you book your Eiffel Tower, your Louvre, all that stuff well ahead of time. You could have walked up and done this. I was able to get tickets a couple of days ahead of time, but the lines weren't long for walk-ups. So that's good in the off season. If you're coming in the summer, you need to book that stuff ahead of time or you'll be waiting in hours long lines in the heat. You know, some of those lines are exposed, like for example, the Louvre for the security and stuff. I can't imagine what it would be like in June, July. So, you know, keep that in mind. Prior proper planning prevents piss poor performance, right, Joe? I mean, so many old references.
If you say so. Yeah, this is the old school throwback episode. All right. Take us home, Sean, or take yourself home on whatever flight you booked.
So Air Tahiti Nui, we were originally going in premium economy from Paris to Seattle to Vegas, switched that up. That was 40,000 Advantage Miles. Then I found the Saver Award, Paris to Los Angeles to Vegas, 57,500. The taxes were $147.90 per person. Air Tahiti Nui, this is our second time. We actually flew home with them in 2019, and it's an okay airline. Not my favorite airline in the world. Not an airline I'm going to complain about. It's a lie flat seat. It's that 222 seat, similar to what KLM uses. Perfectly comfortable, not breaking any records, better than sitting in the economy. The food is a little weird, but overall, okay. The big issue we had, we get to LA, and American and Air Tahiti Nui, nobody wants to give you lounge access. This isn't a huge deal. I'm just putting this out there for people to know. We got there, American Airlines said, go to Air Tahiti. Air Tahiti said, American Airlines. They basically pointed the finger at each other. And so just know that if you're flying into the US with a partner ticket with Air Tahiti and American, they're both going to deny you you access to lounges and you're out of luck. I was a little frustrated there, Joe, after getting pointed around. And then, of course, what do you think happens right after I go to American and then I go to the Star Alliance Lounge, which is Air Tahiti's lounge, and everybody tells us to pound sand. We could have gone to Centurion. There's a lot of things we could have done. But anyway, I'm frustrated. Just got off this 12-hour flight or whatever it was. No sleep. You know, we're dirty and smelling and all this other stuff that happens when you're on a plane forever. And we get into the elevator and I'm talking to my wife and then somebody says, Miles to Memories. So at the very worst time, this is not fair, Joe. I get recognized when I'm at my absolute worst, just disheveled and tired. And shout out to the guy from Hawaii who recognized me. I think recognized my voice. And that was fun talking to him for a couple minutes.
It's not fair that you're so famous, Sean. You know, some of us.
No, I'm not.
Some of us normal people, you know, we don't get recognized. So that is like. That's my worst nightmare. So I honestly feel sympathy for you. I'm sure you ended up recovering in the end, but it is wild when, I mean, sometimes I'm like, you know, especially at Disney, I'm like, oh, no matter how mad you get, do not yell at your kids because you don't know if someone's going to recognize your voice and you're going to completely embarrass yourself. You got to wait till you're back at the hotel room to do that. If you're going to do that, Joe, that's what I tell myself because it's, you know, we're all human.
Yeah. Thankfully there was a little bit of an issue at the AA lounge. Let me give a shout out to Bernard, the guy working at the AA lounge in LA, terrible, rude to me, tried to get me out of the way. Wouldn't even scan my boarding pass. So shout out to you, Bernard. I'm sure there's nobody who's going to hold you accountable for that. But other than that, I mean, the people at the Star Alliance lounge were nice. They just weren't able to get it done. Didn't make any scenes or anything like that. I was just tired and out of it. I agree with you. Act as if people are watching. That's good. That's a way to keep you in line. And sometimes, you know, when you're traveling and you're tired, you know, you get a little cranky. Actually, meeting that guy kind of reset it. I'm just like, why is this important? We weren't hungry. We didn't really need the lounge access. We weren't looking for booze or anything. And we actually just sat in the Tom Bradley terminal for a little bit. And then we walked over to Terminal 5 where our other flight was. And we could have gone to the Centurion Lounge. Like I said, paid $30 for my daughter. Didn't really feel that. We found like a really neat spot and Tom Bradley loved that terminal. Tom Bradley is one of the most awesome terminals in the US because there's planes from everywhere. There's people from everywhere. I just feel so international in that terminal. And so it turned into an okay, good thing. Other than I would have liked to get a shower. That's really why I wanted to get into a lounge. But other than that, not a huge deal. And it was a great trip. It was exhausting, Joe. I'm not going to lie to say that doing all of this in a week or 8 or 9 days was not exhausting. There were times where we slept 4 hours a night where I felt like I was floating. Where we were out 14, 16 hours a day. And then I'd get back to the hotel feeling so drained and then I couldn't sleep. There was a huge adjustment period the first couple days for jet lag. And that's something we've talked about before I haven't had. So there were some challenges here, but would I do it again? Absolutely, man. This is life. And you take these opportunities, you do them, you make the memories. And the fact that we could do a trip like this, I thought of it in January. We did it. I don't even know what the cash price of this would have been, but everything offset by miles and points, even the stuff I spent cash on, I can cash in points to offset it. That's what this hobby is about. And man, so incredible. You know, man, I can't stress enough how awesome it is to be able to do stuff like this and take your kids and show them the world instead of them learning it out of a history book.
Yeah, I mean, it's an awesome spring break. I think, yes, you are no longer traveling around the world. That makes this week even more special, more important. And so I'm totally glad and excited to hear your recounting of getting to take Ellie to do this. And of course, giving you and Jasmine the chance to go out and celebrate yourselves as well. You guys deserve it. So sounds like an awesome trip. Thanks a lot for sharing it. And yeah, you really got me thinking about getting back to Paris. Not for the Olympics. I don't think I need to deal with that, but maybe sometime soon. I don't know. The list is too big. I want to go to Portugal. I want to go to Paris. I want to go back to Spain. Haven't been to England for a while. It's tough. Maybe take a whole, you know, my son, like I said, wants to move to Taiwan. It's tough out here in these streets.
As they say, the more you travel, the bigger the world becomes, the more there is to see and do. I discovered that my very first trip driving 3 months around the U.S., I realized, oh, I didn't get to see everything in 3 months. In fact, there's more now to see than I ever knew existed before. The world is the same way. The more you travel, the more you do it. You know, we're here for a limited time. Just go and try to see what you can, and that will be deeply satisfying, and this was as well. And it all started with a Disney drone show. How about that? But there was so much more to that, and, you know, I am blessed. I am so grateful for it, and that is my takeaway. And with that, Joe, where can people find you when they're not listening to this fine podcast?
You can find me at As Joe Flies all over social media, Joseph Chung at travelmation.net if you're looking to plan a trip with cash to Disney or elsewhere. And You can find Sean sometime in the next month or so on my other podcast, Disney Deciphered, where we'll talk more in depth about his Disneyland Paris adventures. How about you, Sean?
And oh boy, do I have a lot to say. Looking forward to that Disneyland Paris talk. You can find me at Miles to Memories all over social media. We have our Vegas show, youtube.com/Miles to Memories, and milestomemories.com for this show, everything we do. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you next time.
See ya.
Credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.